Hey, everyone, it's Ron Johnson, and this is the Ron Johnson Show on Locked On Sports Minnesota. Got to talk about the Timberwolves. They are now in the hunt. They are in the playoffs. No play-in, six games to go. But there's some about this bench, and there's also some about who they might have to play that we have to break down. Could it be the 5 seed? Could it be the 4 seed? Or would you rather play the 3 seed? We'll talk about that next, coming up on the Ron Johnson Show.
Locked On Sports Minnesota Podcast. It's endless Minnesota Vikings talk with the diverse voices of your local experts. Now the Ron Johnson Show. On the field, in the broadcast booth, Ron Johnson is Minnesota sports. He's played with them, hung out with them, and grown up with all the big names in Minnesota sports. They're hanging out with Ron Johnson. It's the Ron Johnson Show on the Locked On Sports Minnesota Podcast. And it starts now.
Hey, everyone, it's Ron Johnson, and this is the Ron Johnson Show on Locked On Sports Minnesota's podcast network. I want you to remember this episode is powered by and brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, the official sportsbook of Locked On. Just go to FanDuel.com/LockedOn to get started today. And, of course, these parlays are coming up, people. You don't want to miss the final four parlays because I know your brackets are busted. There's no way you pick San Diego State and FAU in the final four. So do like I'm doing and have some fun with these parlays. Well, coming up on the show, we have to talk about the Timberwolves. This is a team now that's giving some people some hope in the state of Minnesota, some true hope right now. We also have Deshaun Foster coming up, former UCLA running back, draft pick of the Carolina Panthers, Super Bowl participant. Sam and I sit down with him in the Daily 3, and then also he's going to join me in the Hang with Ron Johnson segment. As I bring Sam Exerman to the show, my producer, Sam, I don't know what to do with the Timberwolves right now. I'm going to be honest. Like, at one point, I was done with them. At the beginning of the year, I was super excited about them. Then I lost faith. Now I'm back in it. Like, again, it's this roller coaster that I don't know where this ride's going, but they're the 6th seed right now. And as we talked about backstage, they're the 6th seed. They're going to play the Kings. If everything stays the way it stays, they play the Kings, who they just beat 119 to 115. And here's the key to that win. The bench scored 35 points. The bench outscored the Kings bench. And I think that's always going to be their way to win these games down the stretch, because you're going to have to create more. Like, when you look at the really good Suns team, when you look at the really good Bucks team, it was always the bench. When you look at the Warriors, it was Jordan Poole. It was the bench. The bench is what gave them energy. And we talked about Austin Rivers not really doing what we thought he would do. You talked about some of the other players on the bench early on that you're like, ah, I wish they would have kept so-and-so, Malik Beasley. I wish they would have kept, you know, this guy, because the bench was just so much better. Patrick Beverley. They didn't have any energy off the bench. Now, I think the bench is figured out. They got their 5 starters in there, and now the bench is starting to really come. You see Jordan McDaniels, one of the non-big three, because you got Anthony Edwards, Karl Anthony Towns, and Rudy Gobert. When you have a non-big three guy have a big night, I think that's going to be the key. You know, Jaden McDaniels, decent night. I think that's going to be the key for this team. You know, these guys have to find ways for other guys. Other guys have to be able to help them out, because Anthony Edwards, I keep saying this, he's going to have to be the guy. You know, Rudy Gobert, even the funniest thing I saw was a clip of Rudy Gobert hitting that turnaround and the Kings bench getting pissed off, like, oh, even he's hitting shots tonight. Like if Rudy Gobert is getting his turn, you know, he did the little step shoulder, like the Tim Duncan turn fadeaway jumper and made it. That's what they need. They need everybody hitting on all cylinders. But here's the key. They're only 1 game back from the 5, which means if they win, they got 6 games left. If they end up in the 5, they play the Suns. And you said this, that's a scary place to be. Like, and I'm not saying anybody would tank to put themselves in a better position, but I know the Clippers would rather play the Kings. I know the Timberwolves would rather play the Kings. I know everybody would rather play the Kings than the Suns right now, because the Suns, as before, without Kevin Durant, clearly a team you could deal with. With Kevin Durant, it's a tough guard. Like, that's a tough team to figure out, because you can't throw 4 guys at 2. Like, you are completely outnumbered. So you have to pick your poison. You know, do I man up Devin Booker with somebody like Anthony Edwards? Yes. For Kevin Durant, do I just send a double at him? Yes. And so now 3-on-2, I got to figure out how to rotate with Rudy Gobert, be willing to let one of the bigs take a shot that doesn't shoot jumpers like DeAndre Ayton. But that's going to be the key if you have to face the Suns. But that's just my take. I think the Timberwolves are in a great position right now. They're not in the play-in. Honestly, I don't think they want to be in the play-in because so much can happen there. When you just can sit back and watch the play-in, it also gives you a little bit of mental edge of like you're not exhausted because you waste a lot of energy trying to win that one game like they did last year and had a champagne celebration. You waste a lot of energy trying to win that play-in game. And so we saw how that wore on them last year. And then, of course, the Grizzlies put them out of their misery. Now if they're in there and they can beat the Kings, now we're talking. Now, because you never know what's going to happen with the rest of these teams. But I don't know, Sam, what do you think?
Yeah, it just seems like six is the perfect place to be. You don't have to sweat the play-in. Mm-hmm. And you're clearly a bad matchup for the Kings. I mean, they've gone to Sacramento now twice in 6 weeks and won. And that's not something a lot of teams have done this year. And I think their size actually gives the Kings some issues. They're not nearly as big as Minnesota. Timberwolves can score with Sacramento. I know Sacramento plays that up-tempo. They like to get in the paint. They've got a lot of guards that can slash and score around the rim. But the Timberwolves, they're really establishing some depth here, Ron. If you look at the fourth quarter last night, no Cat. Ant was playing about 75%. He's still hurting a little bit, but I'm looking at the rundown. Jalen Noel, tip shot. Naz Reid, three-pointer. Rudy Gobert makes free throws. Mike Conley, driving layup. Jaden McDaniels, 10-foot shot. Like, they're spreading the ball around. Everybody's contributing, and it seems like they're really finding themselves. So I love where this team is at scoring-wise. They're really confident offensively, and I think that they're in the Kings' heads a little bit right now. So don't give me a healthy Suns team. Give me the Kings, who the Timberwolves just beat shorthanded. I like that matchup a lot more.
Yeah, and I think that's the matchup everybody wants. Again, six games left. It's really close. This is a really close race. Anything can happen in the next six games. Again, the Warriors, the Lakers could end up in the AFC. Like, we just don't know. You have no idea with the Pelicans, the Lakers, the Clippers even, the Timberwolves. Like, all those bottom teams are within a game or two of each other, and you only have six games left. So it's going to be a fun race to the end. I think this is what people wanted. Because a lot of people were annoyed by like, oh, this team's already clinched. This team's resting players, getting ready for the playoffs. This team's already clinched number one seed. Like, they don't want that. This is the one year, East and West, I personally feel like there's not a dominant team. Like, I feel like the Nuggets could easily lose to the Suns and probably will. I mean, to be honest. Like, I think the Suns can beat the Nuggets. And so this is the year where you really don't know. And so if there's any year, too, to put some money down on FanDuel, like, this is it, because you really just don't know game to game. Like, the key is going to be whoever is hot. And I think it goes back to the bench. And that's why I like the Timberwolves bench. I think they are going to, like, be a big success. I think with the fact that those stars have been out, we've had Karl Anthony Towns out, you've had Anthony Edwards out, those bench guys had to come in and actually be guys. And so now when you're asked to, like, you don't have as much pressure, you can come in and just – carefree shoot. Like, hey, do your job, man. Like, Anthony Edwards is going to give us 30. Karl Anthony Towns is going to give us 25. Rudy Gobert is going to give us 12 and 12. Just come in and do your job. And I think that's why this team maybe this could be the solution. We will see. But I still think, you know, again, you need another score. And that's why seeing the bench score 35 points, that's what Anthony Edwards needs. He needs to be able to take a breather and the team not miss a beat. But we got Deshaun Foster coming up in the Hang with Ron Johnson segment. Looking forward to hanging with my boy Deshaun, a really good friend. We got drafted together, met him then. We stayed in contact over the years through social media, of course. It's been great. Every time I travel places, you know, like I try to reach out to guys now. And so he's just one of them. And so the 2002 draft class, Hang with Ron Johnson, I guess, trek continues. And we'll have him coming up next. But before we do that, remember, we're a power partner with Care 11. Just go to care11.com/LockedOn to get all of our videos, all of our shows right there on their site. And we have a word from our sponsors.
We're presented today by FanDuel Sportsbook. It's America's number one sportsbook, and it's the official sports betting partner of Locked On. March Madness is headed to the Final Four. You can get in the action there. New customers get a no-sweat first bet, up to $1,000 back in bonus bets if that first bet doesn't win. Go to FanDuel.com/LockedOn to sign up today and claim your no-sweat first bet. Wager on everything, money lines, point totals, which player is scoring 20 or more, who's going to win the opening tip, all of that. Go on the app. It's safe, secure, super easy to use. Don't miss your shot at the no-sweat first bet, up to $1,000 back in bonus bets if the first bet doesn't win. FanDuel.com/LockedOn to sign up. Make every moment more at FanDuel.
Another one of our 2002 draft picks. We had Joey Harrington on recently, and now we have Deshaun Foster. Got Jeremy Shockey coming up at some point as well. So I want to thank you for joining me on the Ron Johnson Show, man. And Deshaun Foster, I remember meeting him. We were in California with the rookie premiere. Guys from all across the country, 32 rookies, put in one spot, asked to hang out, take pictures. And honestly, man, it went off with a hitch. I talked to Josh McCown about it as well, who's now coaching as well with the Panthers. And just the stories I'm starting to remember. Julius Peppers, you know, he talked about, you know, his fake name at the lobby, and Antoine Randall waking up super early in the morning, bothering everybody on the bus or trying to sleep. And honestly, man, Deshaun Foster has been who he's been. Like, I remember Deshaun Foster being a quiet guy, but I don't know if you remember this. The rookie premier team gave you the camera that was like broadcasted, and they said, walk us through your long run, and we'll talk about the actual long run in the Daily Three, but you were the worst cameraman they've ever seen, I was told, because you couldn't hold the camera straight. You was talking, it was swinging, people was getting motion, and I have forgot all about that until somebody else brought that up. Like, man, you remember Deshaun Foster's video they let him shoot? What was going through your head, man? Like, did you even realize they were going to keep taping that whole thing while you were holding a live camera?
Yeah, I didn't think it was going to be like that. I'm thinking it was just some easy, small walk through this real fast. We're just here at the Rose Bowl, and I happen to be playing here, so let's go. And that's it. But it turned into a bigger situation than I thought.
Well, yeah, man, being back at the you know, talk about that. You know, we all got drafted, but you were back in the stadium. Mm-hmm. You had a lot of memories in. What was that like, you know, being an NFL player, but like kind of your start? You know, we took all of our pictures and our jerseys. We got to see our uniforms as rookies, and that was kind of the unveiling to us. What was that like for you, though, being back home?
It was fun because I had left to train and everything for the combine, so I hadn't been back for a while. You know, I was just out there. So getting back was kind of exciting, just to be back in the Rose Bowl, then being with other athletes that had played at such a high level. It was just pretty exciting, just because I think that might have been the first or the second one. I don't know if they did that before, you know what I'm saying? So it was just cool that they did something like that.
Yeah, I think we were the second year, because the year before, I think like Freddie Mitchell, your guy from UCLA, and they had done one, and then we were the next group to kind of do it. And now it's kind of taking its own, it's a monster now because of social media and all the stuff they do and NIL and everything. But you know, looking at the scope of, you know, UCLA versus USC, you know, in your college time playing, you know, and this is Deshaun Foster, former UCLA running back, got drafted to the Carolina Panthers, but you played at UCLA. And when you think about that, as far as like UCLA versus USC, what was that like in your time?
That was a big time rivalry. You know, Carson Palmer was across the street at that time. Troy was over there. They have a lot of good players. So it was just good. We pretty much dominated the 90s. That was about an 8-game win streak in there. So it was just good that, you know, we was holding it down, doing what we had to do, and beating on them boys.
Had to make sure you throw it in there. 8 straight wins.
Eight straight. People forget that, you know, but it was 8 straight.
And now you're headed to the Big Ten, you know, and so you're going to lose a lot of that pack. 10 rivalry stuff you guys had before, a lot of those games, Fresno State, some of those games out there on the West Coast you guys have played. Now you're going to travel to Penn State. You're going to have to travel to Minnesota. You're going to travel to Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State, as a coach, because you're a player, so you remember those rivalries, but now you're also a coach. When you first heard that UCLA and USC was going to the Big Ten, what went through your mind?
I was excited. You know, the platform and we need to play in situations where we can make it to the playoffs, you know, and people need to see our game. So we need that East Coast exposure, Midwest exposure. Like, we need that. And so I'm excited for it. You know, when I was in school, when we played the Big Ten, what I think Ohio State came out here 01, we beat them. Michigan came in 2000, we beat them. So I think we're ready for that challenge. It's a great conference. They're adding us and SC to it, and I think things can take off from there.
Yeah, man, because I had Spice Adams on, and I've had a lot of Big Ten guys on, and some of the Big Ten, especially in Penn State. I mean, Penn State's far, far east. So for them, they're not happy because they're like, we don't want to have to travel. We already got an East Coast schedule. We don't want to have to travel to the West Coast to go play UCLA or USC. And so there's mixed emotions. There's other guys within the Big Ten that like it. Joey Harrington brought up. He has no idea what's going to happen with Oregon. And so you look at guys like Oregon State, some of these other teams that might probably want to jump to the Big Ten. Stanford, has hinted and want to come into the Big Ten. But when you think about that, I love the word exposure. When you talk about these players being able to be on the East Coast schedule, get more exposure, be seen on some nationally, because Fox Sports and the Big Ten have a deal. So you're going to see, the Fox Sports games, the Big Ten, everyday national games as well, where USC, UCLA, people don't see them a lot until it's a primetime game. Exactly. But for your players, what is that? Because everybody always tries to say the Big Ten is ground and pound or this, but like you said, 2000, you guys played Ohio State, you played Michigan as well, and you beat them. But when people try to act like ground and pound or whatever, that the Big Ten can dominate the Pac-12 or Pac-10, what is your thoughts going to that? And because you're a running backs coach, and so you are dealing with the running backs, do you see that being an issue, or has the game evolved so much that it's not like it used to be?
It's not like it used to be. Not at all. I mean, we can just go back because we have a bowl game that is Pac-10 against Big Ten.
Yeah.
Then we can just go back through the history of it, how it's going, So it's not a certain conference is playing a certain type of way. Right. Everybody's running the rock, spreading it out a little bit, putting tight ends in there. It's just certain identities of your team and how you play it. So I'm just looking forward to these challenges, Seattle's far from LA, so we're used to a long flight and getting up and having to play. So I'm not I'm not too worried about that. I just think guys need that exposure. If you want to be and get in the playoffs and be top of the college football game, you gotta play certain teams and play certain games. So I'm ready for this challenge.
And how does that work now from a recruiting standpoint when you can tell kids like, hey, we're going to play on national TV against Ohio State, against Michigan, against Michigan State? Because I know for UCLA, USC, Ohio State, and Michigan, that's kind of your recruiting, like that's your rivalry when it comes to recruiting. Because a lot of Michigan, Ohio State, they're flying, especially Michigan, they're flying out to Cali. They're trying to get those kids out of California over to Michigan. So now how does that help you guys with recruiting when kids are looking at like, well, man, Ohio State is always in the top four. Michigan's been in the top four the last couple of years, and they're getting all this exposure on TV. Now, how do you use that Fox Sports deal, I guess, with the Big Ten to kind of, help that recruiting trail?
Well, it helps now because it's tough to recruit the Midwest if you're not playing any games over there.
Right.
It'd have been hard for me to walk into your house and tell you, like, Ron, come out to California. Your parents ain't gonna see no games. Just playing Pac-10, Pac-12 games. But now that there's gonna be games against Minnesota, we'll be in the Penn State, we'll be in Ohio, be in Michigan, like they'll be able to come and see you play. So that'll help us with recruiting. We'll be able to recruit that area a little bit better. And like I said, like it's a big challenge in all aspects, like on the field, off the field. I'm just excited for it, but I think that's gonna help us because I play with a lot of guys that weren't necessarily from California. Some of our Hall of Famers, Jonathan Ogden, he's from Baltimore. So it's just big that some of our top guys aren't necessarily from California. So it's not going to change our recruiting one bit, but it should help it.
And when you look at you being a former player, now a coach, in that running back room, the position you played, how often do your athletes try to, one up you or say, hey, like I'm breaking that record or they just love to, get the information from you because you've been there and you've been to where they're trying to get to?
It's a little bit of both. My guys are competitive, so they most definitely, like I just had one in the draft that's at the combine this year. His mission was to beat whatever I did there, he was going to beat it. So it was, and that's how he was talking to me about it. But, we got a competitive environment, players and coaches. We try to compete, get these guys excited and get them wanting to go. My last four guys have gotten drafted. So, they listen. That's the number one thing I always say about my guys. They listen. You know, they can take coaching. Just like they said, we've been in their situation, and I really lean on that a lot in the coaching aspect, and they take that. And I'm just happy that I have had guys that are able to take it and apply it on the field.
And when you travel around now, you know, when you look at all the cities you've been to, what's a city that you really enjoy like going to play? And then what's a city now, a new destination you're looking forward to going to?
I want to play at Michigan.
Okay.
We played them at home. I played in the Horseshoe before, so I'm not worried about that. But and Seattle. It's fun to play in UW. You know, it's just the fans, the environment, you know, it's just the way the stadium's built, how it's kind of on top of you a little bit. I'll miss that.
And what's the reason for Michigan? Like, what is it about Michigan Stadium that you can't wait to see?
I mean, it's just what it is, I guess, you know. I normally only see that game when I'm watching the Michigan-Ohio State game. So it's always you know what I mean? So just the environment that I'm seeing, I want to be a part of that.
Yeah, 100,000 fans. I'll tell you this, though. We played there a couple of times. It's quiet. It's not as – like they're fans. They have older generational fans, I'll say that. Like it's – unless it's Michigan State. And again, UCLA, Michigan might become a new rival because I know you guys have played each other before in bowl games, and so that might become a new rivalry. I know in basketball, Michigan – UCLA is going to be a good one. But, you know, when you look at football, yeah, they're fans, they're old generational fans. So it takes a lot to get them out of their seats. Ohio State, Michigan State, for sure.
I hope we don't get any whiteouts at Penn State. I don't need that.
That's a crazy one. That's a crazy one. That's one where you definitely, because we played them on homecoming and it's nuts. I will say that. Because there's nothing out there. Like in Happy Valley, it's just Penn State. So you have nothing else to do on a Saturday afternoon but go watch football. It's not like, you know, you're like in Minneapolis, you know, you got the Timberwolves, you got the Vikings, you got the Wild for hockey. Mm-hmm. So they got the full array here. So it's tough to always get sellout games unless it's a big rivalry. But for Penn State, that whiteout is the one.
Yeah.
When you were drafted, to the Panthers. You know, what was that experience like, you know, going leading up to it and then finally coming off the board so that you could relax and say, okay, I'm good to go now.
I was excited. I was born in Charlotte. Both my parents went to high school out there. Pops,
that's super random. Like,
yeah, right. Went straight back home. Crazy. Before recruiting trips, the only time I've been on a plane was to fly back to Charlotte.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So that was the only place I'd been. But but it's, my wife was like, "Yeah, you met your wife." But
so you met her in Charlotte, or?
Yeah, I met her in Charlotte.
Okay, because I saw your wedding deal. Like it was super secretive, but super exclusive. Like I saw magazines covering it. I saw her, and this was the funniest thing. I love this because like my wife, I remember when we started dating when we were like in our 20, I think. And so we got married when we were like 26, 27. I remember her asking me like 3 years into it, when are we getting married? And I think I said 26. And that's why I joke with her to this day. Like, I'm like, I think I just had that number. Like, let's give me some time. We got like, you took your time. Like you took your time and she was with you the whole way. Like, I got to give her props because there's not a lot of like especially black women. Like, there's not a lot of women that's going to stick around while you try to figure it out. But, you know, like you guys are happy, you know, you took your time. You wanted to make sure it was right. But what was that like was waiting to get married more stressful or waiting for the draft? Like, which one caused you a little bit more stress?
I'm going to go ahead and say married, I guess, you know. It was just, we broke up and then got back together. So we did end up, you know, so that was the stressful part that we were separated. But we got back together and we're here. So I'm excited.
So you was on some like best man wedding stuff. Like you was you was out there like Tay Diggs. And you had to take your time to go wait for Nia Long to come, you know, to get back to you. And, you know, you guys figured it out. But
It made it. Came back. But I'm glad for that, though.
You know. But yeah, man, like you, but like the whole magazine covering the wedding thing and all that, like, was there any stress or were you just like, you know what, I'm used to the bright lights, I'm good with this?
I mean, I really didn't know much about that.
Okay.
Because I was still coaching. That was a Thursday. I went to work that morning. Like, there was a lot going on. You know what I'm saying? So I was.
So she did it all.
Basically.
Okay, smart guy. You're smart, man. I'm gonna tell you this. Like this smartest thing you ever said in your life, man. If you if there's nothing else, if there's no advice, because I know we're in our 20s, we can't give each other advice. I hate when I hear like these 17, 18 year old high school kids giving other kids advice or these 20-something year olds. I'm like, dude, stop giving each other advice. Y'all have no idea about life right now. But as a 42-year-old man, I'll tell you that, man, because I got married at 26, 27. The smartest thing you ever did and will continue to do, my father-in-law always says this, let her do it. Like, whatever she wants to do, just let her do it. It's because, you know what I mean? In the end, it don't really matter. Like, let her do it. She'll be happy. You'll be happy. And life will keep moving on. But I got Deshaun Foster here, former UCLA running back, Carolina Panther. When you look at coaching now in this day and age with NILs, you just saw, you know, Miami for basketball. Everybody's saying they bought their Final Four run. Money doesn't always win. Like, it doesn't always work out. Like, just because you have one player that's making $100,000 or $800,000, whatever it might be, it doesn't mean you're actually going to win. Because if you look at Miami, they were not a top seed. They were the fifth seed in the deal. They weren't like a top seed, which puts them right around top 25. But, you know, not what you expect when you think, okay, if I spend $1 million on a couple players, what am I going to get out of this? But in LA, it's huge. I mean, there's tons of companies. That's all you hear about now. How have you guys navigated that, making sure that players, you know, for you, because you know kids taking money, what can go wrong? How have you kind of helped them in that process when you hear a kid bring up NIL or whatever and kind of assist them in like, hey, this is what you should do with your money. You know, this is what you shouldn't do.
We're basically just trying to give them the resources and the tools to function, basically, you know. So we just had a financial literacy course that they're taking. A lot of this stuff is doing through our player development. Kevin Jordan.
Yep.
So he's handling most of that stuff. Coach Kelly's big on just making sure that the guys have the resources to function and navigate through this new world, basically. You know,
right.
So because they gotta pay taxes. They think they just get money and that's it. But you gotta, you know, so you gotta educate these guys. And our guys are doing a good job at that. And even the ones that know a little bit more, they're sharing with each other, but it's just good to see guys are interested in it. So they want to learn, you know?
And yeah, I think the tax part
earlier is better. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people don't realize that on the NIL, like people are like, oh yeah, you just made $100,000. Yeah. You owe the government 25 of that. Like yes, you gotta pay.
And they want their money. They want their money.
You gotta pay, buddy. You know, last two before we jump over to the daily three. That's three questions, 3 minutes each. Myself, Sam Exum is gonna join the show, and Deshaun Foster. I see you're wearing the Jordan brand. You guys, I know out there, Nike and Jordan branded stuff. How big was that when you found out that you guys were gonna have access to the Jordan brand?
I mean, that's huge. You know, with today's kid, that's big. Coming from Under Armour, it was tough a little bit. Mm-hmm. Just in the aspect of football cleats and, you know, basketball, I think they were doing pretty well, but with the football aspect, it was just tough for us. And a lot of kids didn't like that we were with that other brand, but now that we're Jordan, they're excited. They love it. They all want to come to take photo shoots, do all the stuff. We got all the J's. So it's, you know, it's just good that aspect is done. We don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, because I know Ron Bellamy over at Michigan, you know, he loves to post and send pictures to me of, like, his stuff he gets with Jordan.
Yeah.
Like, how often do you get, like, new Jordan kicks, like, as a coach?
Every day I walk down there, if I got some shoes, I got me some shoes. If I go downstairs, there's something down there. But they take care of them. They do a great job. I think when we first went Jordan, I wore Jordans for like 2 months straight.
Just nonstop. Yeah,
just nonstop. That was just straight for recruitment for the kids.
Man, that's a tough one, man. That's like Jordan is a tough brand to recruit against. Like, cause I've seen my cousin went to Michigan. Like he committed to Michigan. So I had to be a part of that. And I'm like, whatever, I get it. And then I saw the pictures and I'm like, yeah, I totally get it now. You know, the gloves, the cleats, the t-shirts, the shorts, the sweatsuits. Yeah. It's like, yeah, man, it's my, and what's crazy. And this is the last one too. This like your players have never seen Michael Jordan actually play.
Ever.
Never. Like never. Like unless they go on YouTube or something. And they probably don't, because it's not exciting to them to like sit there and watch a Jordan game like when we were growing up. Nope. But what makes that brand or Jordan himself still so sustainable? Is it just the trend that kids have learned from us? Because it was our generation. Like that's what I try to tell people all the time. Like the 80s babies, like we were the Jordan brand. Like we did it. Like we lined up early before school started to get the J's when they released. Like we had it. We were wearing like Jordans in warmups. Because I remember Jamal Lewis, when we went to play Atlanta Falcons had the hard turf. Jamal Lewis wore Jordans for that game. Got fined. He got fined, but he wore Jordans for that game. Like we were the ones that started. And then Randy Moss did it. And then all of a sudden, Jordan's like, wait a minute. I need to get involved in this because these cats out here wearing my shoe. Right. Yeah. These cats wearing my shoe and getting fined. But I'll never forget that. Like Jamal Lewis. I forgot who else. I think it was like Jamal Lewis, Chester Taylor. It was a bunch of running backs that did it. And so they all like, man, let's wear Jordans, man. Let's do it. We you know, blah, blah, coach. You know, we went in and they had the black patent leather joints. Yep. Our uniforms were white and black that game. So they wore the – and they got fined. Everybody got fined that wore them. But we did it. I didn't do it because I couldn't afford to get fined. But those dudes – Jamal was a first rounder. He could do it. Like, you go get fined. You take that peak slip. I'm not getting fined. I'm going to go back and put my regular Nikes on for this game.
Right.
I'll warm up with y'all in the Jordans, but I'm taking them off after this because I'm not getting fined.
Back out, you know,
right.
I'm going to pull the socks up.
But when your players have never actually seen Jordan play, but all they do is talk about Jordan, like, do you ever try to educate them on that of Jordan versus Kobe versus LeBron? Like, do you guys ever get in that argument?
Yeah, most definitely. They think LeBron is the best, and he is. There's nothing against that. LeBron is. But they haven't seen Jordan. It's just it's tough to argue that with them. But it's a daily conversation. Like if you walk in some of the rooms, you can see like top five basketball players up there. You know, because Kareem went to UCLA too, so we felt most definitely in there. You know, but it's crazy because the kids just they don't associate Jordan with the player.
It's just a brand.
It's just a brand to them.
You know? Which is so crazy to me. Like, because I don't feel like, and again, maybe that's why he's the GOAT, because I don't feel like. You know, Kobe played, even though he passed away, but Kobe played his career out. I don't ever see like Kobe's clothing and shoes being transcended. I don't see James Harden. I don't see LeBron's even. Like when LeBron's done, I don't feel like people are going to still want LeBron 20s. Like I don't see it happening. Like it just won't happen. I don't think
he'll ever. Shoes from 88.
Right.
You know what I mean?
The same shoe. Wearing... He hasn't made a new one. It's the same shoe. My goodness. Like I was literally just telling them, we were just down in Orlando, Florida at the Nike outlet. And I was just saying that to my wife because my daughter now, she's turning 12. And all of a sudden now she wants Air Max 270s. She wants the Air Max Dunks, the Jordan ones. And I'm like, you don't even know what you're asking for. And I was trying to explain it to my daughter. I'm like, do you even know my friends had them though? They had the Air Force ones and then they had, you know. And so that's what today's kid does. It's all about the trend. They have no idea about Michael Jordan, who he was. But man, that's crazy, man. But, and I lied, you know, just like any strength coach. One more before we jump into the daily three. Yeah. and after, of course, I always like the guests like to give some words of advice before they take off. So right when we're done, I'll let Deshaun give like his last little bit of advice. But I want to ask you a question though, too. When you look at now you, at the age of 43. Yeah. So at the age of 43, because I'll be 43 this year too. Man, I'm feeling old. At the age of 43, when you look back on 23-year-old Deshaun Foster, and then you look at these players, like, do you find yourself, and again, you know, you don't have to tell us everything, but do you find yourself trying to like tell these players the pitfalls, like, hey, don't do this, because I had a teammate that did this. Like, how impactful have you been to those players, being able to tell them stories you've heard, players you've seen get arrested, make mistakes, X, Y, and Z at the school?
That's the number one thing, really, just trying to get ahead of stuff. Give them, you know, if I see something in a guy that I've seen in somebody else or an ex-teammate, just try to help them. Give them advice in just certain situations, because that's basically the thing. They're in college, they're gonna fall. You gotta catch them. So I just try to make sure I'm there to catch these guys and just teach them the ropes, you know, good or bad.
And I was going to say, too, your boy, I forgot about your LA boy, because he was, I just ran into him a while back at a game, Reggie Bush. And when you think about Reggie Bush being in LA after, way after you, well, not too far after you, but after you, running LA, you know, running back out there. When you look at NILs now, because Reggie Bush just basically did what NIL is doing. And when you look at the NCAA and Charles Barkley and all these people now saying the NCAA is full of it, that you're now wanting to be involved because the new commissioner is a former governor, I forgot of where, but he's, or president, sorry, of NCAA. He was just on CBS for the basketball deal. And he said, we need to get a group of people together to figure out how to govern this NIL. And so, of course, the NCAA knows, okay, we can't fight it. We got to come alongside of it and help it. But when you think about guys like Reggie Bush getting in trouble, you know, other guys like, you know, Terrell Pryor getting tattoos for tickets to games or tattoos for jerseys, and that's basically what these players are doing now. Do you think that it's time for the NCAA to let it go and just give Reggie Bush his Heisman back?
Most definitely. Most definitely, because that's just, if it's not, at the end of the day, these aren't crimes. They're not committing crimes, you know? So you can't hold it like that. If it's legal now, what they're doing, then you got to let them get his Heisman and go from there.
Yeah, no, true. It's not illegal. You took a couple dollars here and there from a couple companies that you had already at USC. It wasn't like it was a recruiting violation. He was already there. He became a superstar, and these companies wanted to come alongside him before he made it big. So it is what it is. I agree. I think it's time to give Reggie Bush's Heisman back. The NCAA needs to figure it out before they get left behind, because eventually somebody like Jeff Bezos is going to create his own, and he's going to have a way to do it. That's why Snyder doesn't want him to buy the Washington Commanders, because he knows if Bezos gets his hand on the NFL, he's going to change it because he has the money to do it, and he doesn't care, you know? And so I think that's going to be the key long term is, you know, because if I'm an owner and I can pay some of these players under the table and I got billions, I'm going to do it. And that's why I think they're trying to stop Jeff Bezos. But if he's smart, NCAA, that football and that basketball, there's a lot of money in that. He can get them to separate and just come to him, get all the regents and board. But, you know, that's down the road. Yeah. We'll end up having because then Amazon gets to run all the games, and then he really has a monopoly, and I know they don't want that.
For real.
If he gets his hands on it, all the Washington Commanders games will be on Amazon Prime. Like,
yep, most definitely.
Yep. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants to deal with that. We got the Daily Three coming up next. That's three questions, 3 minutes each. Remember, people, you can download Locked On Sports Minnesota on Amazon Fire, of course, and Roku. Just go to your Amazon Fire, your Roku device, and just search Locked On Sports Minnesota. You'll find all of our shows right there on your TV. And we have a word from our sponsors.
Thank you, Ron. Let me tell you about the NFL Draft Buzz newsletter today. Authored by our own Luke Inman, you can subscribe at lockedonpodcast.com/newsletters. Get up to date with all the NFL Draft info, top five lists, everything going on in the NFL Draft world. That's NFL Draft Buzz. Subscribe today.
Well, now it's time for the part of the show that I love the most. That's the Daily Three. That's three questions, 3 minutes each. We'll get to Sean most of the time, and I'll pick up where he left off. Take it away, Sam.
All right, Deshaun, I got a few here, and a couple of them focus on great accomplishments in your career, including this one. You did something that every player in their wildest dreams wants to do. You scored a touchdown in the Super Bowl. Take us through that moment. Take us through the play, what you did with the football, if you still have it. Take us through that moment.
We were in a tempo. You know, we were kind of in tip 2 minute. We called a red ball back then. So he called a trap. I kind of just hit it, broke out to the left. I wanted to go around Smitty's block, but I kind of went in between Smitty and the defender. So they ran into each other after I passed them. And then it was a foot race after that. Then I was thinking I was about to get that Sports Illustrated when I got in the end zone, but we didn't get that victory. So, but I still got the ball. It's upstairs and in my little football area, you know, but it was a trap in 2 minutes, you know, it just hit. That's how we actually got back in the game. We started going 2 minutes that second half, and that opened up for us because we couldn't move the ball at all in the first half.
Really underrated Super Bowl, right? I mean, I probably not the result you wanted, but as a fan, back and forth in that fourth quarter, that was wild.
That's Janet Jackson right there.
Oh, yeah. Was it? It was. Yeah. It sure was the Janet Jackson.
That overshadowed the game.
I was going to say, when you guys came out, though, you didn't know what happened after half, did you?
No.
Not until later?
Yeah, no. Yep, not until later. Because it's not like we saw it on social media that it was just
right. People, exactly.
People told your parents told you or what, you know, like, oh, hey, this is what happened.
I mean, I could imagine. I could imagine like because I was at like so I haven't been to a Super Bowl in on the field. But like the Vikings had Ludacris perform at halftime. Mm-hmm. And so as we're down under the tunnel, he's coming out as the players are coming out. And so, or yeah, he's walking off as the players are coming out. So I could only imagine like if Janet Jackson happened to be walking off, you know, covering herself. And then you see all these players like walking by like, wait, what is going on out there?
Like Beyonce sang the national anthem.
Man, that was, I forget. Yeah, that was low. Cause I remember that was my rookie year. I do remember that. Mm-hmm. And I remember even like Madden, I knew Carolina had one of the better teams because that ended up being the team I used the most on Madden. And honestly, Steve Smith that year in the slot was nasty. Like it was so hard to figure out where he was going to be, how to stop him. And then, of course, you know, the running game. I don't remember your speed, though, but I feel like they made you like really fast. Like that's the only thing I remember is like.
Yeah. Boy, I guess. Huh? That's
because I do remember, me, Chester, Javon Hunter, who else used to play? Jamal Lewis, like we used to do Bart Scott, like we used to do like Madden tournaments at my house. And I remember, like, I was always trying to flip the coin to get the Panthers because I'm like, that year, like, they made Steve Smith like a god in the slot, you could not stop him in the slot. Mm-hmm. So, that's why I tell people all the time, too, because I met him when he came up here and he covered the Vikings for the NFL Network. And I was telling other people around, like, man, like, people really don't understand how good Steve Smith really was. You know, like, because he was smaller, so he got, you know what I mean, he got knocked a little bit. But I don't think people really understand. Like, him and Santana Moss, for me, were two of the best I've seen running routes. Like, it was unstoppable.
We used to have alert calls on each run play. So if they was off Smitty, we'll just spit it out there.
Yeah, I mean, he was that guy. Yeah, what you got next, Sam?
Especially love.
Yeah, Deshaun, number two, I would classify you as a dual threat running back. You can catch the football, run the football, and that's so important in today's game. What do you think separates the backs that are effective in the passing game versus those that aren't?
I mean, you just stay out there in certain situations. You know, when they can use you in a pass game, like Christian McCaffrey, Alvin Kamara, who else we got? Eckler in San Diego, you know, when you can really get out in the pass game and cause different matchups, that's helping, especially if you got a good mind, offensive coordinator or head coach or whoever's calling the play. So, you know, if you can add that element to your game, you got to. Like, I just try to tell my guys, you got to be all around back. You got to be able to pass protect, you got to be able to catch, you got to be able to run. If you can't do that, then you're cutting yourself short. But you need to be able to come out there and really have some sort of skill set that can cause mismatches and help the offense.
Yeah, no, I think that is key. And you know what? I always got to do this on the show. Omaha! Got to call a little audible. had my boy Clinton Portis was on the show a while back, and Clinton Portis dropped a little nugget for us that went viral. He said if he could do it all over again, some of these pass blocks, like he said, he remember having to block like Strahan. he said like Strahan, forgot the other name. I don't know if you remember, Sam, the other name he used, but I know Strahan was one of them. And he was like, you expect me to come up and stun Michael Strahan and then stay in the game and then go run and like go catch a ball. Like, I can't even get my shoulder. And he was saying how his shoulders hurt. So like, if you could do that part of the game over again. And I know he was a little bit joking, but you know, CP, he was dead serious too, a little bit. Like, he was like, he basically said, like, I'm sorry for my quarterbacks, but y'all would have got sacked a little bit more if I knew what I know. Exactly. Like, same thing, like going out of bounds, instead of fighting for 2 yards, he was like, he would have stepped out of bounds. You know, when you think about the game like that too, are there certain situations where you look at that too, like, hey, I don't know if I needed to get that 2 extra yards. I might have just went down or gone out of bounds. If I could look back at it,
I might have played safety. Just came right out and just played DB. So now I can dictate when I want contact. Like, today I want to hit. Today I don't. I just want to tackle guys, arm tackle. You know what I'm saying? But at running back, there was it was on every day. No matter if we playing, it's on. So I might have switched positions. But you know, there's something about them touchdowns that you're addicted to. But
true.
A lot of schools were recruiting me to play DB, and I should have maybe, you know.
Oh, I didn't realize you play safety. Okay. Yeah, you'd have been a big safety.
Yeah. It might have worked out. But.
All right, what you got next? That was the last one.
All right. October 13th, 2001, Deshaun, taking on Washington. You rushed the ball 31 times, 301 yards, 4 touchdowns. Take us through that day. What was working for you?
Everything. I was just on that day. And it started early. It was like first 2 carries. You know, I was like, yeah, this is going to be a good day. But I actually coached with Jerry Neuheisel. He's our receiver coach, and his dad was the head coach of the Rick Neuheisel was the head coach of Washington. So every time I play golf with him, he likes to let me know that I owe him some money because he got me drafted. it was a good day. We was running stretch, power, inside zone, running a lot of stuff. It was just hit. At the end of the game, I think I broke like a 95-yard run to end it. But it was pretty exciting. It was a big game. I think I might have had that. I did pretty well against Washington throughout college. So it was good to see that I was able to continue to have success.
That's crazy. That's 300. How many carries was it, Sam?
31. So about 10 yards a carry.
Yeah, you was working that day. I'm about to say, because October 13th, 2001, I had to look it up. I thought this was the day. That was the worst day of my life. We lost to Northwestern on a Hail Mary. Like, I've never, ever seen Hail Marys work. And it was one of those where it got tipped out of the end zone. And then Damian Anderson was the running back, caught it and, like, just walked into the end zone. I'm like, knock the ball down. And I was so pissed off because we had been telling our coach the whole game, if we come down to this moment, put the tall receivers in the game. Like, let us go in there and knock the ball down. He put 3 of the dumbest DBs we had on the team out there, and all 3 of them are standing behind the receiver. We watched that tape so many times, and even our DB coach, who David Gibbs, who's now at UCF, I just talked to him this week when I was in Orlando, and to this day, he was like, I still don't understand how all 3 of them ended up behind the one receiver they had out there. Like, and the dude just tipped the ball back to Damian Anderson. He catches it, walks in. And, we were the agony of defeat video on ESPN, like, for the rest of that month. Like, because our 300 and – he had to be, like, 340, I think, if you remember, Sam. Jake Cuppy, he was, like, 6'8", 340, and he was in tears. And it was funny now because we're like, dude, he's too big to be crying. But, yeah, so the day Deshaun Foster rushes for 300 yards, we were picking up our tears off the Metrodome field because our DBs just could not knock the ball down, and we lost with a Hail freaking Mary. Because we're all sitting there like, Hail Marys never work.
That's one of the best Northwestern teams, though, isn't it?
Yeah, they were good that year. Yeah, they were really good. That 2-year span of Pat Fitzgerald, because that's when Check With Me was created. So that whole, like, I hate, and I still hate it to this day. I think it hampers. That's why Northwestern quarterbacks never really play in the NFL, because they don't know how to decipher the defense on their own, because there's a level of Check With Me, and then there's like, I'm going to do everything for you. And that's what Northwestern does. Like, some Check With Me's are just Check With Me, make sure the play is right, and then if you want to check it. Northwestern completely at that era, now they probably change it, was like, I'm going to run this offense for you. Zach Kustak, I don't need you doing anything. Let me control this for you. And they were a really good team. They were a really good team then. And so we had them, though. We had them on the ropes. It was, I think, we were up 17-10. And then the fourth quarter, they just stormed back, tied it up. And then instead of us keeping the ball and trying to run the clock out, our coach, 3 and out. And then we're just praying, like, just stop them. And Hail Mary. We lose. Because we're just sitting back, like, let's get ready for overtime. We got this. Nope. They freaking converted a Hail Mary and ran out the stadium. It was the funniest part of that, though, was like they didn't have a lot of fans there, so like they had like fans try to run on the field, and it was like 40 of them, it was like 40 fans ran on the field. I'm like, it's not like Alabama versus Ole Miss, like y'all ain't that big. Like, it was like 40 fans jumping over the Metrodome wall, like, man, get off the field, like, get out of here, like, get off the field. Man, that was the worst day, one of the worst days of my life, because I'm like, that's when I knew the Hail Mary actually could work. Never worked for me, though. But now I want to thank Deshaun Foster for joining me on the Ron Johnson Show, man. Really appreciate it. Congratulations to you and your wife. I did, like, because in the middle when we were scheduling this, I saw the picture. I'm like, dang, this dude just got married in the middle of no announcements, no like it's coming. No, just all of a sudden, boom, magazine cover. But no, your wife, man, you guys are a beautiful couple. But I always like to do this at the end of the show, man. I love to let the guests. Back to the Future was big when we were growing up. So if you can go back to the future and give 10-year-old Deshaun, 15-year-old Deshaun, 23-year-old Deshaun, or 42-year-old Deshaun last year before you got married, if you can go back and give yourself any piece of advice that could help you and others, you know, that were going through whatever you were going through or whatever, you know, you were heading to, what would you go back and tell yourself?
Just athletically, just mostly just take care of your body, you know, start getting massages and stuff earlier and getting a routine like that, cold tub, hot tub, just stuff like that. Stuff you're doing in NFL that maybe just could have did in college just because, you know, you have more time and just know the recovery aspect of it, you know. So just knowing that now, and that's really it. Just take care of your body. You know, that's the number one thing I tell my guys, just take care of your body. So man, just put good things in it and you'll get good results.
Yeah, no, and that goes outside of sports too, because man, there's a lot of junk people can eat. You know, I definitely appreciate my wife. She battled breast cancer back when she was 37, so real young to have to deal with it. But you know, after that, like, she was dead on about organic foods and eating right and vegetables. And you know, I think I'm over peppers at this point because we eat so many peppers. But you know, I definitely appreciate it. I tell people all the time because people are like, man, what do you do? I'm like, I don't do anything. Like, I don't really work out as much. Like, I just eat right. I'm like, I don't put a lot of fast food in my body anymore, like at all. You know, even we were on vacation in Orlando and, you know, she made sure we were getting baked chicken and rice. And, you know, so I definitely appreciate that for her, because for our daughters, for sure, because kids and eating healthy, man, like it's one of those things that can either make or break you. And I don't think people realize that. But I want to thank Deshaun Foster for joining me on the Ron Johnson Show. Everybody remember, you can like, download, share, comment, subscribe on YouTube to the Locked On Sports Minnesota app. You can get all the Ron Johnson shows, the football party with Arif Hasan, Luke Inman, Luke Bryan, and Sam Ekstrom. But I want to thank you guys and have a great day.